You're listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. This talk was given at 2309 North Broad Street. For more information, check out circleofhope.net or join us in person on Sunday evenings at 5 and 7 p.m.
So we know what a word means, like if you look up in the dictionary what a word means, but it has context around it and meaning offered to it that's sometimes confusing or hard to understand. In Circle of Hope, we have specific words that try to undo some of that cultural context. We try to soften some words, make them less loud or less loaded, you might say. We try to use words that have common meaning. Maybe you've heard a few of them tonight, words that have common meaning that don't need to be unpacked or don't require cultural understanding to really get. Does that make sense? Of course, we have a subculture in our own right, and even in our language. Despite our efforts to remove some of the language from a loaded or loud place, some of our words develop unstated meaning, or they're used so much, they kind of just develop cultural meaning. I think that's a good thing, actually, that we've developed some jargon even that has context, has meaning. I don't want to elaborate too much on Circle of Hope ease, because that's a really specific thing to talk about. And we can talk more about it if you want, talk back. But let me go back to this first idea. Have you heard of Christianese before? Some of you grew up in the church, so you know what I'm talking about. Service and submission are kind of words like that. Service is a really unusual word to use in general. Like, when I think of service, I think of getting my car serviced. That's what I think of. You know, like an oil change. That's what I think of. But they mean something else to us. So if you grew up in the church, you might have an idea about what those words mean, and they might have some baggage. Is that true? If you grew up in a certain way, do these words have meaning beyond their literal definition? Are they loud? Yes? And also, if you didn't grow up in the church, they might not have a lot of meaning because they're rarely used. I mean, I don't think normal people use these words a lot to describe really anything. Do you hear them used commonly outside of a kind of a Christian context? You do?
Restaurant.
Oh, maybe I need the restaurant job. What about submit? Do you hear that one a lot?
Application.
Oh, like you submit a paper. You would hear it. You're a teacher, right? Did you submit your essay? Oh, this is good. Or there's a submit button, right, on a lot of forms on the internet, right? This is helpful. I appreciate this. And in restaurants, you're a server. You serve food. You provide a service. Oh, that's good to know. Yeah, so I think some of those words have baggage, and you wouldn't always apply them to you go all the way to the service industry to find use of that word, but what does it mean for us here? And I think that these words have some negative connotation at times. There are things that can be exploited by others, because Christians talk about these ideas like they're good. And so you might have experienced someone exploiting them. And that can be problematic. And they can be really bad for people, too. I was talking to someone, and I said something about submission. And she said, no, that's a non-starter. We can't even talk anymore. So, you know, I had to go find another word and develop some more trust, because that word had baggage. Coercion, manipulation, violence even can accompany these so-called disciplines. I wouldn't go far as to say virtues, but they're disciplines. And there are Bible passages that talk about service and submission that have been used to exploit people. People have asserted them or collected power using them. That's majorly problematic. But those problems may cause us to resist the good that's here, the discipline that exists, right? We might just be afraid to do it. And in turn, because we haven't seen these ideas expressed in kind of the Christian vocation, we might just resist them altogether and start serving ourselves, collecting power, making others serve us. That's a great thing. I mean, if you want, you know, especially guilt-ridden Christians, if you want to exploit them, you know, tell them how much, you know, basically how poor you are. And a lot of guilty Christians will come and help you. That's a flawed kind of dichotomy. I prefer a mutual situation there, you know. That's the kind of community we have where we actually mutually serve and submit to each other and try not to otherize anybody or kind of make a caste system. But the Christian life is contradictory in that sense. You know, what frees us is service, sacrifice, and submission even to God, right? That's the whole idea. If we spend our whole existence trying to protect ourselves or get served, we might miss the point. Jesus says it this way: whoever tries to keep their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life will preserve it. This might sound really negative, but we're kind of in the life-losing business. A lot of the things we do seem kind of painfully self-sacrificial, and it's hard to even see how we'll get a benefit from it. And I want to be careful about this because it's so easy for us to weaponize these words against each other and to claim that someone suffering is ultimately going to benefit them and not try to do something to alleviate it. You know, that's the dark side of this. And on the other hand, we might think of the tangible blessings that come from a life of service and submission and think that unless we're being blessed by God, we're not really doing it. And so on one hand, we can go for really beating ourselves down, and on the other hand, we can look for more prosperity and health and wealth because of our radical submission. Like if you share in the common fund, maybe you'll get like 10 times the amount later or something like that. Or you could share to the point of like going hungry and think you're really holy that way. Also, not really how it works. So it's all about humility. Service and submission. Serving someone usually means, in this case, doing something for someone, for someone where love is our primary concern. We serve each other not for a reward or respect or for power, although sometimes those follow, but out of love, maybe even a sense of duty. Some of you would do it out of honor, maybe. Mutuality. And in Christian communities, service is voluntary. You're free to do it, not coerced. You don't have to do anything. Submission is considering someone else and their needs above yours. That doesn't mean losing your sense of self or celebrating your own oppression. But it means putting God's values above your own, putting your neighbor's worth above yours. And I think that in order to do this, we need to have a secure sense of who we are. Our submission and service is pointless if it's not sacrificial. You know, if you just think you're a loser and you automatically serve and submit because you can't be bothered to care for yourself, I think that kind of cheapens the sacrifice. You actually have to love who you are and what you do in order for your submission and sacrifice to count. It actually has to be a step. You know, if you're just beaten down and that's just your default, not a lot of spiritual movement happening there. You actually have to have a sense of who you are so that you can give of yourself, freely receive what God's given you so that you can, you know, freely share it. You have to be on the receiving end first, because God's self-sacrifice and submission to us fills us up. It becomes hard to understand this in our society. The humility that we're trying to demonstrate needs to be first and foremost demonstrated by our leaders. And I think when you sign up to be a leader, you kind of sign up for a little bit more responsibility. If our leaders aren't demonstrating them but are asking us to, we automatically have some major problems. You can imagine this, right? And I think this applies to leaders in our culture in terms of the power and privilege that they have to lead us in that work. You know, forfeit those things that protect you so much for the sake of Jesus. as best as you can. It's hard to understand and interpret this whole idea without a kind of mutual submission and mutual service. Jesus models this to us himself. Jesus sacrifices a lot of power and privilege. You could say just from the start that the God of Israel becoming incarnate in the flesh is an automatic kind of condescension, submitting already some power that he has to be clothed in frailty. That's the whole big idea. But it's also in vogue around the Christians that I hang out with to call Jesus a homeless peasant. You ever hear this before? Like my friend Shane went to a courtroom once with a shirt. He was probably doing something like serving communion to homeless people with pizza and soda or something like that when the city had made it illegal to sell, to give out food to people without homes, and then he got in trouble. He went to, the whole thing, he had a shirt that said Jesus was homeless, which is true, right? Foxes have their dens and something, another animal has a place to live, is the rest of the verse, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Anyone know the actual reference? Foxes have their den and birds have their nests, right? That's it. But the Son of Man, there's another sermon, has no place to lay his head. So we think he kind of took on homelessness. But he had a craft of some sort and was educated and probably literate. I would say definitely literate. So he had some education and some skills, which put him above the lowest class in ancient Palestine. But he submitted himself to even lower so he could relate to people. So he wasn't born into poverty. He kind of chose that life. That's the kind of service and submission that Jesus expressed. He rarely kind of played up those things, though. He purposely diminished himself for the sake of God. In this whole backwards way, this immortal being condescends into a human form and then dies to redeem humanity. The whole thing keeps getting the deal keeps getting worse for Jesus. Paul, the apostle, did the same thing. Educated, powerful, allegedly a Roman citizen. He generally cast all of that to the side for the sake of God. Now, sometimes he uses his citizenship for the greater good, but in general, he's ridding himself of his power and his privilege to kind of create a new economy. When we talk about these virtues, they ultimately come from a tradition of radical sacrifice. Sometimes sacrifice that would even put people's lives at risk. These people, Jesus, Paul, other leaders, modeled the behavior before they imposed it upon others or even asked someone to do it, before they expected someone to do it. Whenever Paul gets really amped up and he starts insulting the people that he's writing his letter to, which happens a few times, it was a common literary technique. He's doing it because he wants them to follow in his lead. I've suffered a lot for this. Can't you suffer with me? Or are you going to keep trying to collect your own stuff and rip apart the church? The leaders modeling it really compel us to do it. Again, if the leader doesn't, it's really bad news. And it's really hard for the Christian to even approach this. As a result of their posture, I think they deepened themselves in how they related to God. But this is tricky for us because we just don't have leaders like that. Our bosses don't really act. Maybe yours do. My bosses don't really act like that. Maybe our parents didn't. Even leaders in our very community don't. Our political leaders certainly do not. Sometimes even just like the polar opposite of, the kind of the craziest things that could ever be said. Those people make service and submission, those words, louder, harder. You live in a world where you have to just take what you can get because no one's going to share with you. The idea of letting go, being vulnerable, sharing, submitting, sacrificing, that's a recipe for dying. It's tricky for us to understand. When we add this dialogue to our interpersonal relationships without acknowledging current and historical kind of power structure, we get into bigger trouble. These ideas are made worse when they're applied, for example, in a marriage, in another relationship which has historic power dynamics. the submission in marriage, I'm not going to exegete, you know, all of Ephesians, I think, is the chapter, about how spouses should submit to each other. But let's just plainly say, the whole point is about mutual submission. It's not about one particularly doing it to another. You kind of get a sexist interpretation after men keep telling you it for like 2,000 years. That's kind of a thing that happens when, you know, the men have the power. But in general, in my reading, it's definitely mutual. It's a very stimulating topic, but, you know, ask about it later. I think it's mutual. It has to go both ways. So when we apply it in a real life situation, it gets trickier. These days, we're moved to hold on to the little power we have and try to prevent further marginalization and oppression. When we talk a lot about justice issues, it's hard to marry them with service and submission. And I'm ready to say that a general imposition of these virtues from on high and from the powers that be is just entirely inappropriate. If you're not engaged in community with me and you're asking me to do it, I don't really know what to do. You know, at least be in my parish, you know. Don't just be my pope. You know, be connected to me. Know me. We need to do it with a sense of mutuality. That's the ideal form of it. Serving one another, submitting to each other, considering others better than ourselves, contributing to our sense of mutuality, we need to do it together. And not just ourselves, or not just expect them of other people. In our mutual system, like the one we aspire to, our service to one another, that is, doing things for each other and helping one another out, should be largely reciprocal. It should feel natural. Submission and sacrifice happens best mutually. The leaders who call us to these virtues, like God himself, have already demonstrated this. So we're already in a sort of covenant with God to do that. He's done it with us. We'll at least do it back to him. Naturally, the hardest time for us to submit and serve is when it's not being returned. That's the problem. What do we do when it's not mutual? We know it's best when it's mutual. What do we do when it's not? You know, and some people just don't have the capability of responding or reciprocating. You know, parents know this. We serve our children. They can't serve us. Sometimes they don't even know how. You know, they don't even know what our needs are. It's beyond their capacity. And so we have relationships like that. You know, resenting your child for not being able to serve you is not good. Likewise, meeting someone where they are at their depth and just understanding what their limits are is okay. That takes a lot of humility, though. It's really hard to do that, especially when you're a recipient of injustice and you're kind of left with this call to endure more. If you save your life, you'll lose it. So I'm going to try to get through this long passage. Let me read it to you quick, and I'm just going to make a quick comment about how they're doing it in Peter, just to give us an idea. Therefore, since Christ suffered as a human, you should also arm yourself with his way of thinking. This is because whoever suffers is finished with sin. As a result, they don't live the rest of their human lives in a way determined by human desires, but in ways determined by God's will. You've wasted enough time doing what unbelievers desire, living in their unrestrained immorality and lust, their drunkenness and excessive feasting and wild parties, their forbidden worship of idols. They think it's strange that you don't join in these activities with the same flood of unrestrained wickedness. You love the poetry of Peter here. So they slander you. They will have to reckon with the one who is ready to judge the living and the dead. Indeed, this is the reason the good news was also preached to the dead. Oh, that's interesting. That's a very stimulating sentence. This happens so that although they were judged as humans according to human standards, they could live by the Spirit according to divine standards. The end of everything has come. Therefore, be self-controlled and clear-headed so that you can pray. Above all, show sincere love to each other, because love brings about the forgiveness of many sins. Open your homes to each other without complaining, and serve each other according to the gift each person has received as good managers of God's diverse gifts. Whoever speaks should do so as those who speak God's word. Whoever serves should do so from the strength that God furnishes. Do this so that in everything God may be honored through Jesus Christ. Let him be the honor and power forever and always. Amen. Good little end of the book. A book that you should read 1 Peter tonight, and you'll see the call to service and submission is super radical. just extraordinarily kind of beyond our ability to contextualize. When he talks about slaves submitting to their masters and he talks about women submitting to their husbands, there is a lot to say about who Peter is even talking to. But that's the kind of radical submission that we're talking about. The whole letter is about Christian suffering under a foreign empire. I hope that we can embrace this today. But I hope, I hope we can embrace it right now, because it might feel like you're just surviving under a foreign empire. Like this isn't a place that you belong in. We're suffering under a foreign power regardless of who controls the guns. Sure, there are better and worse people to do that. And then there are the worst. So you're under some oppression. So we'll suffer. And we kind of should suffer on this earth. If we ever get too comfortable, we should start wondering, right? If you try to save your life, you'll lose it. Jesus suffered as a human, Peter tells us, and we should too. We should arm ourselves or ready ourselves with the same kind of thought. We're praying that we're clothed with the mind of Christ. We suffer because we're following Jesus. The world would be decidedly inhospitable to us. We're finished with sin. Christ finished sin. And when we don't act like the self-seeking world, and they scoff at you because what you're doing is so ridiculous, you know, you'll suffer a little bit more. These human desires are a waste of time. They're futile. Self-service and power acquisition, the opposite of service and submission, a waste of time. Lack of restraint, lack of discernment, lack of boundaries, unrestrained immorality. The line between the people who follow God and the people who don't is marked not by beliefs, but by actions. When we have such a radical alternative way of doing things, it is noteworthy. You are marked off as separate. Peter wants his audience to contrast with others, and so they're making a difference. They act differently. And subsequently, people make fun of them. They aren't part of the normal. They aren't part of the mainstream. They're the alternative. I actually think if we behave in a humble way now, people won't make fun of us very much because they're longing so much for it. They actually want that kind of treatment. It's refreshing to receive it. But enduring that is suffering. That's what service and submission might do to us. What happens to the people that hurt you? They'll have to reckon with God, who judges the living and the dead. We rest assured because those who cause us suffering will have to work things out with God. It kind of controls our violent, vengeful nature. Donald Trump wrote a book where he said, if you don't get even, you're just a schmuck. Right? Service submission, called to something else, is totally different. You know, the leader that kind of asks you to get even isn't really leading you the way that Jesus might. So those who cause us suffering will have to reckon with God. God have mercy on them. We don't need to fight them or protect ourselves. God's with us. God's on our side. His very incarnation is a reminder of that. This isn't a call against inaction, but a call against desperate action. Peter's concerned with time because he knows it's wasting. The end is near. It's hard to know exactly what he means by this, right? The end of everything has come. 2,000 years later, we're still here. But there's urgency in it. Peter is instructing his readers about how to act with people who don't believe. That's where we get all this humble submission language. He's pointing to how Christians might love amongst themselves, too. Peter's keeping his audience serious. Be clear-headed. Be self-controlled. Stay focused. Pray, contemplate, meditate, be one with God. Doesn't the world want that? Christians can lead them to that kind of life. We're finished with sin. Now we endure the suffering of the world. We love, so our sins are forgiven. Be hospitable. Open your homes to each other. Share your food. Share your time. Share your resource. That's what sacrifice looks like. That's the alternative. And we do need that kind of generous hospitality. So let's extend this to each other. Never mind the world. Because you might even think of the worst case scenario, you know. Let's just think about one another. How shall we treat each other? How about your spouse? Some of you are married. Take on a task that they've neglected to do out of love. and not resentment. This is tricky, especially in houses that are very organized with who does what task. You do something for them, especially that they did, that they messed up, right? That's the hard part, you know. They didn't do it, and I'm just going to do it because I love you. Or do it before they don't. You might even be able to anticipate their incompetence and then help them. That's really helpful. You know, then it's not even, you're not even necessarily mad, you know. You're just covering the bases. Oh, this is, if you have children, do something that you wouldn't normally do with the kids. You might get up earlier, or you might take them to go do something away from the other spouse who has a life to live at home, just keeping the whole thing together. There's a few different, you can find yourself in that zone. In our community, sign up to do something. There's always enough to go around. You can talk to me or Belle or Trisha, who's back there. We'll give you, if you want something to do, we'll tell you. Michelle needs you to do a lot. So you just go talk to her. She'll help. She'll help you find something. Host a meeting. Host one in your house. Share extra with the common fund. Sign up to be on the kids team. Help with the love feast that's coming up. There's a lot that we can do. This behavior might result in suffering, right? Isn't that when it gets hard? Service is fun when it's fun. And then when it starts to not be fun and it hurts you, now I don't want to do it anymore. That's where the good stuff happens. This posture of suffering, really, that is Christian. Jesus suffers with us. But when we suffer with him too.
Thanks for listening to Circle of Hope's Sunday Meeting Podcast. If you want to talk about it or get connected to a cell, you can find one under our Connect dropdown at circleofhope.net.